Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by You Can. Smarter energy to finish stronger. By VeloFix, the world's coolest mobile bike shops. By EnduranceCon, coming up June 27th, 28th at the Long Beach Convention Center. To purchase tickets, go to EnduranceCon.com. By our Challenged Athletes Foundation. This last year, we sent out 3,260 grants, totaling $4.8 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Babbittville.com, and all of your favorite podcast apps. As always, endurance lives here. Our next guest, one of the true legends of endurance sports. Now people know him as EnviroSports, an event creator, but people might not remember that Dave Horning was one of the coolest triathletes of all time. Dave Horning joins us. Dave, how you doing, bud?
Hey, Bob, it's always great to hear your voice. I'm doing well. I got my pool workout in this morning, so the day has started right.
Yeah, it has to, right? So take me back. Where'd you grow up?
I'm still growing up. Thank you.
Yeah, there you go.
Marimonte High School in Orinda, swam, went to Cal to swim, ended up having to play water polo, which was kind of cool in those days because it was five fouls and you're out, not the wrestling match it is today. And then at some point, I started running marathons and heard about this sport called Ironman and triathlons. I went, oh, a collegiate swimmer doing century bike rides, running marathons. I should be able to do this and have some fun.
Exactly. And so were you successful right away doing the sport?
The very first triathlon I actually entered was in Davis, California, Dave Scott's home turf. And his father, Vern, and mother were in charge of the event. But the lake was so small, we had to do run, bike, swim in that order.
Right.
Well on the run. I did well on the bike. I dove in the water, swam about 200 yards and went, you know, maybe you actually need to practice swimming. You know, you learn that you actually do have to do all three sports. So the first one was kind of a learning experience for me. But from then on, yeah, I practiced all three sports and went on to win the Escape from Alcatraz 3 years in a row. Did Ironman with you.
Yep.
Successfully as you. But, you know, it was fun back then.
So as a big guy, you know, you come over to Kona and that heat is a different animal. You could have success at other races, but coming over there is a little bit different. What was that like for you the first time out there in that heat?
Well, what was really fun about doing that the very first time, because I'd won the Escape from Alcatraz prior to that, and I managed to get American Express as my sponsor.
Right.
And I looked at the Ironman, and I went, you know, this event could actually be won in the transition area as opposed to the straight out on the road and then the swim. And I went, so I designed the first tri-suit. And since American Express blue with white lettering, I went, hey, this will be kind of a cool tri-suit. Unfortunately, wearing that suit was the same as wearing black out on the Queen Cam Highway. And I was on my well into heat stroke when I realized I was in, what, fourth place or something to mile 85 or 90 and pulled into the aid station, got off, and the doctor's right there. And he goes, what's the problem? I said, I'm about to go into heat stroke. And he said, how do you know? I said, I just know all the symptoms, so I'm taking myself out of the race. So that was not the best experience. But the next year I realized I still had American Express as my sponsor. So I said, okay, we're going to do the reverse. We'll make it white Lycra with blue lettering.
Yeah.
White Lycra when it's wet. Tell me what happens to it.
White Lycra when it's wet
becomes
see-through.
Transparent.
Yes, it does. So you basically were X-rated,
you know, triathlete. It's just part of the entertainment.
Exactly. So what was the first year you came over to Kona?
82.
Okay. And so you came over to 82, and obviously the famous photo from Carol Hogan is you, I think, on the road to Javi with your...
It was right at the turnaround at Javi.
Was it the turnaround?
Where, yes, I was in my white tri-suit, and I realized, let's have some fun. And I had a catered lunch stop provided by the waiter who'd been at my table the night before. So he shows up and got off the bike and sat down, ate my banana, was offered a Bud Light beer because Bud Light was the sponsor. And after a few minutes, I said, oh, I see you've got people waiting for this table, so I think I should get up and leave. And he goes, what about the bill? I said, oh, just send that to American Express.
So it was really an American Express ploy.
Yes, it was. It was about, it was also about having a little levity and showing some fun because, you know, what's interesting, the officials come by, you're going to be disqualified. You're going to be disqualified. I said, don't worry, I'm not going to touch anybody and nobody will touch me.
Right.
Had my own banana, you know, so got back on the bike and kept going. Now, the only problem with that event that year was it was only like 3 or 4 weeks after I'd swum around Manhattan, that little 31-mile swim.
Yeah.
And I realized that when I arrived in Kona that racing up front was not going to be the best thing for me. I just said, I'm just here to enjoy it. And that's when all of a sudden I said, let's have some fun, do the aid station, and move on.
So, and when you do something like that, I mean, you knew ahead of time, okay, I'm a little fried from this swim. And so the night before is when you made the decision, hey, you know what?
Literally the night before, I wish I could remember the waiter's name and what restaurant it was. But yeah, the night before, well, I'd been thinking about it, but then the night before is when we decided, let's just have some fun with this aid station.
So, but meanwhile, was he going to be at the aid station, or did he come out there?
No, he made arrangements to make sure he was there.
Because it wasn't just you getting served the banana. We're talking there was the silver deal with what looked like a bottle of champagne
and then the tray
and the tablecloth. And it was very cool.
Oh, yeah. No, the champagne bucket with the Bud Light beer in it, you know, crystal, chandelier, you know, all that stuff. And, it was kind of fun. And at that point, I think I was actually still in 30th place or something.
Now, did you end up, you got back on the bike and finished the race?
Got back on the bike, finished the bike ride, ran about 6 miles in the run and realized that, it wasn't going right. And I said, okay, I could walk the next 20 miles, but what would that prove?
Right.
I went, nothing.
Yeah.
So that year, I actually won the race to the massage table.
And more importantly, a photo that has lasted forever, right? Nobody remembers.
I never looked at it as a photo op. I just decided I wanted to have some fun. Because the year prior, when I had that blue suit on, at one point I was in second place, and it was interesting that, let's see, who was doing the commentary that year? Eric Heiden.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Looked at me, you know, there I was, challenging, I think, who was I?
It was 82, it was probably Dave Scott.
No, I was ahead of everybody except,
Mark Montgomery?
I think Mark Montgomery was right ahead of me.
Okay.
So I'm chasing Mark. And Eric Heiden starts analyzing my bike style of, gee, my elbows were out too far. And I thought, well, okay, I was a very inexperienced bike rider.
So you can hear him.
Oh, yeah.
He's like in the ABC van, basically dissecting your form on the bike.
Well, that's what I saw on TV.
Oh, okay, but you couldn't hear him while he's...
No, I didn't hear it live.
Oh, okay.
I saw it on TV later. And, of course, that year, because I dropped out, I won the race to the medical tent.
There you go.
Okay, so I had a first to the medical tent. I had a first to the massage table. I come back the next year, and I won the race to be first to drop out because I didn't even bring my bike because I was scheduled for knee surgery 2 days later.
So you did the swim and then went to coffee.
I actually had my cap on, and I thought about doing the swim. I was in great swimming shape, and I went, Dave, this would be unfair to the other athletes for you to go out and swim.
Yeah.
Have other people draft off you, because I knew I'd be in the lead pack leading.
Right.
Maybe not first, but certainly have people drafting. I mean, that's not fair to the other competitors. So I just went, off the beach and stood behind Valerie Silk and watched the cannon go off when they had the big false start. But they had no way to bring anybody back.
Oh, I remember that. So you were planning to do the swim.
I had planned on doing just the swim. I had my suit on. I was on the beach. And all of a sudden, I thought about it, and I went, no.
Not
Dave,
fair,
just,
yeah.
Just go be standing behind Valerie, and all of a sudden, I watched all the pros. Well, whatever. We had pros, but they weren't unofficial.
Right. There was no money. The first prize money was 86.
So this would have been 83 or something, and all of a sudden, they all bolted, and there was no way to turn them around.
So you were one of the few guys who looked at this sport as sort of a canvas to show your personality. And I remember the cover of Triathlete magazine where you were pretending to be a Russian pro. This guy is going to come and dominate. I think it was something you did with Bill Katowski.
Bill Katowski came up with that idea.
Okay.
I did not. But Bill was my roommate at the time, publishing Triathlete magazine. And he goes, Dave, I want to do the spoof article on Boris Bogoslavsky.
Boris Bogoslavsky. I love that.
And I had also scheduled a swim from Alcatraz to Angel Island because that's where they thought the Anglin brothers and Frank Lee Morris successfully escaped to when they escaped from Alcatraz in June of 1962. So I said, hey, I'm going to do this swim. Come along and photograph it. And that was the photo that was taken of me getting ready to jump in the water there. And then, of course, then the saga continued when I went to do the inaugural Chicago USTS triathlon in 1982. And I dressed as Boris Bogoslavsky with a gas mask on for the bike ride.
Why was that? Just to cover your face so people didn't know it was Dave
Hornet. The Russians were really concerned about the air pollution in America.
Oh, that is funny.
So can you imagine trying to breathe through a gas mask?
No. I'm riding Lakeshore Drive wearing a gas mask.
Yeah, right. That's also in the... I had to make sure I took all the stupid ventilators out so I could actually breathe. And then I did the run with that on also. And then, unfortunately, at the start of that race, I got hit in the head by some French guy. And at the finish line, I collapsed because I had a cracked eardrum.
Oh, my God.
So instead of going to Jim Curl's wedding, I think it was that day.
It was, yes.
I was in the ER, but this story continues also. So I'm in the ER, and I said, you know, I was born in Chicago in Passmont Hospital in 1948. And they said, welcome back. And I said, what do you mean? Well, you're back in Passmont Hospital. This hospital is now the ER hospital for Northwestern.
That is
full circle.
Wow. That is amazing. So, Dave, as an athlete and you're doing, you know, you're pretending to be a Russian athlete, you're having catered lunches delivered. When did you start feeling like you're going to try to make a living at the sport, or
That all was right at the same time.
Because, okay.
I won the Escape in Alcatraz in 81, yep. Won it in 82. In 82, Runner's World magazine Runner's World put me on the cover of the magazine along with Kathleen McCartney, and they did a big feature on the Escape, and I wrote this whole article on how to train. I ended up with some nice, and I won the swim around Manhattan, and then all of a sudden Simon & Schuster comes along and says, hey, write a book.
Yeah.
And I went, yeah, maybe I can make a living at this. And I had a nice stable of sponsors, American Express, Bianchi, Gore-Tex, manufacturers Hanover, Pan Am, Nike.
Wow.
And then I stepped off a curb one day before some race, sprained my ankle, and I looked in the mirror and I went, what is the value of a former professional triathlete? Zero.
Zero, exactly.
And that's when I realized that, holy, here's this nascent sport of triathlon. There's very few events. I said, hey, I can start creating events. And the very first one I created was called Liberty Liberty, because I realized if we could put on an event that people might actually be able to relate to the landmarks,
yes,
they might pay attention to the sport of triathlon. So we did a swim that went from the Statue of Liberty, a bike ride across New Jersey, and a run to the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia.
How cool was that? And it's one thing to say, and nowadays, if you go into a city and say, okay, I've got a track record with Rock and Roll Marathon of 30,000 runners, we're going to fill up 150,000 hotel rooms, we need your support. Cities are like, okay, we understand that. We'll provide X. We'll pay you to bring this event here. But back then, there wasn't a track record. Even New York City Marathon wasn't that big at that point. How did you go about getting cities to buy in on something? Oh, I'm just going to put on an event. We're going to go from New York to Philly, and we're going to be riding and running through your streets.
The best story there is when I had a meeting with the superintendent of the Statue of Liberty, and I walked into his office, and I said, I have this idea. How can we do this together? It's all in how you approach people.
Right.
And he bought into it completely. He said, hey, I really like this idea. We can do this. And also, actually, that whole idea was actually to do the inaugural New York City Crystal Light Triathlon.
I remember that.
What I realized was to put on one, after thinking about Liberty, Liberty, I realized, oh, let's start at the statue and finish in Central Park.
Yes.
And the best part of that story is because I won the swim around Manhattan in September of 1982, within a week I was in Fred LeBeau's office at New York Roadrunners Club going, hey, I think we should be able to put on this triathlon in New York City, and I know the only way to do that is with you, Fred, and he bought off on it.
Well, that's apt. I knew Fred pretty well, and that was important to come. If he found out through other means that you were trying to do something in his city, that would have been tough.
I knew yeah. straight to him. I had a 1 hour meeting with him, and true enough, the next August was the first, last, and only Crystal Light New York City Triathlon.
So when you put something like that on, and we're talking, this was not just, it was made for TV, but weren't there age groupers involved as well? Or was it just made for TV?
No. The 1983 Crystal Light Triathlon was made for anybody that wanted to do it. We had pros there, obviously. I mean,
right.
Scott Molina won it, and unfortunately, I'm trying to remember who won the women's race.
Yeah.
TV was there. That was all part of the deal.
Right.
I mean, Crystal Light came in as a major sponsor, and then they had, I think it was CBS or NBC television.
Yeah.
I've forgotten which. It was a made-for-TV event, finishing at Tavern on the Green.
And obviously blocking off roads between Empire and Central Park.
The most amazing thing about that event was that's back when the West Side Highway still existed as an elevated roadway.
Right.
And we got up on that. Here we are going along on an elevated expressway where there's no intersections except maybe one or two. And every half a mile was a cop standing there on this. I'm going, really?
And who's paying for those?
Really? Yeah, it was that was probably one of the most expensive triathlons ever put on, along with that, Rico LA Ironman?
Yes, yes. What do you think that thing cost to put on back then?
Well, of course, this is 1983 yeah. dollars. I don't know, $1 million?
Yeah, it was $1 million. So basically it was $2 million now, $3 million now.
Oh, God, more, right.
Yeah.
Of course,
wow.
It's also something you could never do in New York now, because the nice thing was, because the West Side Highway was elevated, it was easy to get on and off of it.
Right.
And minimal impact on traffic, because
they just closed it down for the day.
Highway probably started just a few blocks north of what was the World Trade Center. And then we could get off right going straight into almost, six blocks into Central Park?
Right. Yeah, no, it's right there.
And then once you get in Central Park, it's frequently closed on Sundays anyway.
Exactly. So
right. The hardest thing, is, of course, with triathlons today is finding venues that actually work.
I know. When you do things like Liberty to Liberty and the Crystal Light Triathlon, you look back at those now as epic events, right? They I remember Kenny Glaw, I think, won one year with Liberty. How many years did you do Liberty to Liberty?
Liberty to Liberty went on for maybe 10 years.
And wow.
I actually tried to bring it back, but all of a sudden the countryside in New Jersey just got too crowded. But back to one of the things you asked about Liberty to Liberty and getting approval from cities, the nice thing about when we biked across New Jersey is we only went one way through those towns.
Right.
So it was minimal impact on those cities or towns, because we actually only went really small towns. And we came in one end and went out the other, and it was minimal impact. And we actually got permission to close off a lane on the Ben Franklin Bridge to bike in and finish the bike ride right there in front of Independence Hall. And then the city, Mayor Good at that point was the mayor in Philadelphia, totally bought into the event, so we could run down and run up and down the steps of the Philadelphia Art Museum and come back and finish right in front of the Liberty Bell in Independence Hall. And the mayor was there actually handing out the finisher medals 2 years in a row.
Wow, that is so cool. So when you do events like that, how do you follow up, right? These are epic, once-in-a-lifetime type of events.
You're right. How do you top it?
How do you top it? And you're that type of guy, right? You're like, okay, I did this. I want to run from, now I want to do something. We're going from San Francisco to L.A., or you want to do something
actually,
epic.
Well, actually, then I managed to meet a friend of mine who had done the Ironman with me, and we had lunch one day in San Francisco, and all of a sudden, he says, Dave, I'm going to challenge you to a race across the United States. And I said, Andy, I don't think I could run all the way across the United States, but what if we put together a relay team to run across the United States to raise funds for some anti-drug program? And we did. We put together 4 motorhomes and 5 people in each motorhome, and off we went, running across the United States.
You ran the whole thing? I mean, the relay team?
It was a relay.
Yeah.
20 people, so each motorhome had a 5-hour commitment with the 5 people on there, and they could break up that 5 hours however they wanted. You might have an ultra runner who said, hey, I really want to go run for 4 hours.
Right.
But then 15 hours later, he had to go run again.
Right. And then if you wanted to run 15 minutes, you could do that.
Yeah. but I also remember coming down to your neck of the woods to do the Horny Toad Triathlon.
Yep.
1982, 83. No, actually, I was
81.
There for Horny Toad in 81.
Yep.
Back when, boy, you biked east out of La Jolla from UC San Diego, and it was just a two-lane road.
It was, yeah. No, and we ran in Sorrento Valley. No, that was a cool event.
Yeah, a good time. And then, of course, the USTS San Diego.
So how has it all changed for you as sort of the over the years putting on events? How has that changed, and is still as much fun now as it was then?
Thank you for asking that question. Of course, I'm no longer putting on any triathlons because I just saw it, you know, going and doing its own thing. Of course,
right.
Everybody was trying to aim only to do an Ironman, and I had no interest in putting on an Ironman event.
Right.
So for our event production now, we're concentrating on doing swims and trail runs, as well as one road race in Death Valley, where we were, 2.5 weeks ago, doing the 24th annual Death Valley Marathon, which is just spectacular. I mean, you're
it's
in
beautiful.
Spectacular scenery. Our objective with our events now is to put on events that you wouldn't be able to necessarily go do on your own.
Right.
And it's like in San Diego, we do the San Diego Shark Fest swim from Joe's Crab Shack across to the foot of the Coronado Bridge at Tidelands Park. It's exactly 1 mile, and from the start, you can see the finish line.
That is so cool. Epic events is what you're all about. And I know we were chatting the other day, and you were talking about a new golf event that you're launching.
Right.
Talk a little bit about that.
All right. So I was in the water in Mexico 4 years ago where I go hang out in 83-degree water and do a swim race down there called the Zihuatanejo Shark Fest Swim in honor of the movie The Shawshank Redemption. And all of a sudden I had this idea of going, what if I went on a golf course with no clubs, just my arm and a golf ball? And I went, gee, we call it throw the ball. Well, there's nothing sexy about that. So I asked a friend of mine, what would this be in French? He goes, oh, it'd be jeter le ball.
Oh, now that's cool.
And yeah, I mean, it begs the question, what is it? So on the front of the shirt is going to be, you know, this logo of guy throwing the ball. And on the back, it's going to be a cross through golf clubs, as in sans clubs. And the objective is to do this on, you know, a 9-hole course, be it three par three or any kind of golf course. And you do it from the front tee. You throw the ball where you're in the course. And once you get on the green, you roll it into an imaginary hole, which has a 3-foot radius. And once you're inside that 3-foot radius, you're done. But if you're outside that and you actually manage to successfully roll it into the cup, then you get 2 gold cup points and you get to subtract those 2 points off of your score. So a friend of mine and I got to do this on the Death Valley golf course back in December, just the two of us to see if it would work. We each threw a 74 and had a blast.
Was your arm sore?
Walking along. Of course, the hazard we had in Death Valley was the coyotes wanted to keep stealing the golf ball. So our plan,
yeah.
And yeah, I think this is what I'm looking forward to when I come down to your neck of the woods here in a week and a half, is to try to do an inaugural jeter le ball benefiting the Challenged Athletes Foundation, hopefully on the golf course, that the Sail Hole Golf Course there, downtown.
Oh, downtown San Diego.
The airport.
Oh, interesting.
It's a par 3 course with 9 holes.
Yeah.
Relatively flat. And I'm hoping we can make this happen and raise a bunch of money for the Challenged Athletes Foundation.
That would be pretty damn fun.
And then ultimately take this sport nationwide, because the nice thing is all of a sudden, done right, we'll be able to get people on golf courses they normally would not be able to get on. They don't have to train. They don't have to bring any clubs. Just them and their arm. And they get to go along and do this and enjoying the sights and sounds in various locations. And at the same time, after doing this in Death Valley, the guy I had dinner with challenged me. He says, now, Dave, if you really want to make the sport go somewhere, you've got to take it to where golf started. I go, yeah, that would be Scotland. And I said, that would be the St. Andrews course. And he goes, I'm willing to bet you right now, $100, you'll never get permission to get on the St. Andrews course. And I said, thank you very much for the challenge. I'll take that bet. But when I win that bet, I will not take your money.
Because have you started talking to those guys yet?
St. Andrews course is a public course. It's the clubhouse that is very, very, very private.
Yeah, you don't need the clubhouse.
Oh, I don't need the clubhouse at all. It looks really nice in the background.
Yeah.
So anyway, who knows where this will go?
I love that. You sound as excited now about new events and what you're doing as you were 30, 40 years ago.
You know, what's interesting, Bob, you bring that up and people go, so Dave, when are you going to retire? And I go, when I'm no longer having any fun.
Exactly. People say that to me all the time, too. And I'm like,
I read about other people that, you know, well under their eight, you know, it's like, why, what am I going to do if I retire?
This is what you're supposed to do in retirement is have fun.
Right.
That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
We're enjoying what we do and we love what we do and we get to.
Exactly.
Does it ever get old when you're putting on that marathon or Shark Fest or anything you're doing?
At some point, yes. I mean, it's like, you know, the nice thing is we created the Shark Fest swim because I realized that people wanted to come to San Francisco and just swim from Alcatraz, not have to bring a bike, not have to run.
Right.
And that's when, 1995, we created the Alcatraz Shark Fest swim because everybody thought you couldn't escape from Alcatraz because of the sharks. But at the same time, remember when you were a non-swimmer taking swim lessons?
Yep.
Tell me what you were when you started. What were you called?
Yeah, I was in with the pregnant women, so I was very slow.
Well, anyway, the thing is, by the time
you're a guppy or
swim a little
right?
bit, you're called a guppy or a minnow.
Yeah,
and as you move your way through it, when you graduate, you're a shark.
Right. Yep.
So therefore, Shark Fest has two definitions. You know, you had to be a qualified swimmer. Oh. Exactly. So it started with Alcatraz, and the second Shark Fest was San Diego. And now it's Lake Tahoe, Statue of Liberty, Boston, Mystic, Connecticut, Washington, D.C., Zihuatanejo, and I've got a few other places in mind. That looks like we might be able to do one in Nashville, Opryland, Charleston.
Wow. So you're doing one at Empire State? I mean, not Empire State, at the Liberty.
We do a swim from the Statue of Liberty, the mile and a half past Ellis Island, past the New Jersey Railroad Terminal, back into Liberty State Park in Jersey City. And this all came about because several years ago, I read in Business Week about the mayor of Jersey City, Steve Fulop. In his campaign to run for mayor, he swam from Jersey City to Manhattan, did a flip turn, and swam back.
Wow.
That made Business Week. How long do you think it took me to get on the phone with him?
30 seconds.
Right. I called him and I said, hey, I've got this idea about swimming from Manhattan across to Jersey City. And he goes, Dave, if you make that event stay entirely within Jersey City and New Jersey, I'm on board. You'll have everything you need. And all of a sudden I realized the Statue of Liberty is in Jersey City on the New Jersey side of the state line.
Wow.
Even though it's in New York Harbor.
Yeah.
And thus the inaugural Lady Liberty Shark Fest swim started 5 or 6 years ago.
So how many people do you get at your different Shark Fest events?
I'm sorry?
How many people do you get at these events?
Well, for the Alcatraz event, it's 900 people. For the Statue of Liberty, it's like 150. Boston gets 300. Washington, D.C. will have 300 this year. San Diego will have 300-plus. It's a smaller crowd. I mean, one of our objectives when we put on our events is to have them being not just a number of people. So it's not a quantitative event, it's a qualitative event.
Yeah. As a race director, people sometimes you get caught up in the logistics and all the rest of it, but there's something about being at that finish line and seeing people change their lives forever, because we tend to forget that a lot of these folks, this is the first time they've ever done something like this.
Oh, yeah.
The first time. Does that still resonate with you when you watch people come across their first finish line?
Absolutely, because I also realized, yes, you point out exactly, they've had a goal to do something, and they managed to achieve that goal, and that is really nice. It's also, we're hands-on. I mean, people are able to come and talk to my wife and I that we're in charge of the event. They can find us. We're not just these people lost somewhere in the crowd. So it becomes a much more personal experience for people.
Are you still doing a lot of swimming yourself?
I was back in the pool this morning. Both my shoulders have been operated on. Fortunately, it was just detail work, according to my doctor.
Detail
work. I'm able to swim pain-free. That's the nice thing.
Wow. That is really nice.
I mean, when I was in Zihuatanejo, I'd go out and do my 4.5-mile hike early in the morning, starting at, you know, when I could see the stars and everything, and I'd finish with a cup of coffee, come back to Hacienda Eden in Troncones, take off my running shoes, dive in the water, swim 100 breaths straight out, lay on my back, look at the sky, swim 100 breaths straight back in, and relax.
Good for you, man.
And not have to think, oh, left arm, right arm hurt. It's nice.
So if people...
No running anymore, though.
No. Well, running's overrated. So
but it sure was fun when I did it.
If people want to find out more about your events, do they should just go to EnviroSports?
Well, EnviroSports is the corporate name overall for everything that we do, the combination of our runs and our swimming events. And, of course, for the swims, it would be SharkFestSwim.com.
Okay, SharkFestSwim.com, and they'll see all the different events.
And then hopefully at some point it'll be JetéLeBall.com.
Exactly. The nationwide tournament that's going to be taking over the nation.
Well, the other thing is golf courses are looking for foot traffic. And we have no impact on the course.
None. Nope. You're not taking any divots. And you really, you think about it, if you guys went out with glow balls and with headlamps, like when we play speed golf, we go out with headlamps early in the morning. You could be out there before the courses are even open, and it's free money for the golf course.
Yeah.
Which they like.
Yeah. I like that idea. But the nice thing is, done right, we want to be able to attract a lot of people. The other thing is, you can do it in foursomes, fivesomes. I have to figure out all the logistics there. The nice thing is, you don't have to rent a cart.
Nope.
You don't have to rent any clubs. You don't have to line up your shot, figure out which club you're going to use. It's just you and your arm. And you'll throw it overhand once and realize that that wasn't very smart.
Yeah.
You'll throw it sidearm or underhand. Because you want to get the roll, and you just walk up and throw.
I like it. Very cool.
And I look forward to doing it with you.
I would love it. We'll do it when you're down here.
Maybe on Sunday morning the 8th of March.
There you go. I would like it. We'll find a course.
You know, we'll just have to figure it out. But you have just done such a phenomenal job of promoting fitness and athleticism for people. Throughout your career, going back to what'd you have, a $75 bike when you did the Ironman?
Absolutely. $75 police auction bike.
Did the chain ever come off?
You know what? I had flat proof tires. Actually, the weird thing was I thought you did the thing in 2 days. I thought you swam 2.4, rode 56, camped out, and rode back. So I had pannier, sleeping bag, and tent on the bike. So I was a little bit underprepared. But you know what? Just like you, when you get across that first finish line, it changes you.
We just think back to those nascent days, and of course, I heard about the sport because of that article in Sports Illustrated.
Me too.
And of course, there I was with Dennis Hurst, and Dennis Hurst and I both looked at each other and said, "We could do this."
Yep.
And I just went, "Yeah, this could be fun." Of course, the real history is that it started before the Ironman, but the Ironman's the one that put the sport on the map.
No question.
Of course, then we look at where it is now. It's mind-boggling to think that there are all these Ironman triathlons everywhere, and the 70.3s and everything else. I mean, I'm pleased to see that all these people that are out training to be able to pursue their own personal goals in the sport. And the real thing is it becomes part of your lifestyle. So
no
it's
question.
Even if you're not able to race anymore, and that's why I look back on it now, I'm going, yeah, I really enjoyed the racing, but I enjoyed the training actually more than the racing.
Well, that's the social part. Right, you go out with your buddies and you go for a swim.
Yeah, not only with your buddies, but just all of a sudden just out seeing things, being able to go places where you wouldn't have gone otherwise. And I'm really glad I did it when I did, because now, wow, what a competitive sport it is now.
It's competitive, but it's funny. People ask me, you know, when you go to Kona, how different is it? And I said, you know, people've got their power meters and the rest of it, but still, the nice thing is, just like when you went to the starting line, and Jan Frodeno goes to the starting line, or some 70-year-old, you don't know if you're going to get to the finish line. It's still the same. You know, you might have done all the training in the world, but it's not like an Olympic or sprint where you sort of know you're going to get to the finish. Things happen.
Right.
And you have to deal with the ups and downs of that day, which is what makes it very, very special.
Yeah. Yeah.
Love it. Hey, David, thank you so much for taking time to chat. It's always such a pleasure to catch up, and it's going to be great having you down here for our 40th anniversary party.
I'm looking forward to the 40th anniversary, Bob, and we will discuss further about trying to do a mini Jeté Le Ball when I'm down there the first weekend in March.
Love it. Dave Horning has been our guest again. We're brought to you by UCAN. Smarter energy to finish stronger by VeloFix, the world's coolest mobile bike shops. By EnduranceCon coming up June 27th, 28th, Long Beach Convention Center. To purchase tickets, go to EnduranceCon.com. Check out any of our interviews on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Babbittville.com, all of your favorite podcast apps. As always, endurance lives here.